This is the Live Your Edge podcast, episode 31. Hello, everyone. This is Gilbert, your host. Welcome to the show. Today, we'll be talking with Jarrett Clennard. Jarrett's mission is to connect and bring together the most talented millennials of our age. He is an award-winning author, authoring two books, 2 billion under 20, as well as 3 billion under 30. He is also a TEDx speaker, as well as an entrepreneur, and was named the world's most connected millennial by USA Today. Today, we'll be talking about masterminds, what they are, why you should be part of them, and how to get started. I'm really excited for this interview. Join me in welcoming Jarrett.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Today, we have Jarrett Clennard with us. Jarrett and I are going to talk about what is the importance of creating support networks, and also the value of networking, as well as masterminds, and maybe some reasons why you should be part of them. So welcome to the show, Jarrett.
Thanks for having me, and just really excited to talk about this topic. It's something that's near and dear to my heart. I think it's very important for any young business owner or entrepreneur, and I'm glad that we met recently. So very excited to chat with you and chat with your listeners.
Yeah, awesome. Great to have you on the show, Jarrett. So just jumping right in, how did you get started, you know, in your career? I know you're 22 now, is that correct?
23, just turned 23.
Just turned 23. And, you know, even before you were in college, you were already connecting with a lot of very important people. So what got you into that? Like, what inspired you to connect with successful people?
Yeah. So I grew up in South Florida in the United States, and started my first business at 15. Like almost all 15-year-olds that go into business, I failed miserably with my first business, and made every mistake you can think of, from not having enough capital with that first business to not really knowing my industry, to not knowing competitors. We could have an entire conversation about all the mistakes that I made. The biggest mistake I made, though, was poor mentor selection. And I actually spent almost every day of 6 months from a time period that I was 15 going into 16 hanging out with a guy that I later found out had spent time in prison for securities fraud on Wall Street. So like Wolf of Wall Street style, this guy had charges for securities fraud, spent time in prison. And I very quickly realized that if I wanted to be a successful entrepreneur, I needed to surround myself with much better individuals, both in terms of their integrity, but also in terms of their subject matter expertise. Because not only was this gentleman low integrity, but he didn't really know anything about the space that I was operating in, which was educational technology or ed tech. So he didn't know anything about education. He didn't know anything about startups, didn't know anything about technology. For any of the technical people listening to this, he had me building my first website on a platform called Joomla, which was like the 15th programming language or platform you'd want to build your website on. Something like WordPress would have been better. And so I realized this after the fact, and it wasn't until 17 that I found other young entrepreneurs like me. And so from really 15 to 17, I felt isolated in South Florida where I grew up. And I had reached out to much more positive mentors in those 2 years, namely this gentleman, David, who was called the most connected man you don't know in Silicon Valley in Forbes. And I read this article about him where they talked about how he was someone who was well known and well regarded in Silicon Valley, but he wasn't necessarily a household name like some of the peers that he kept, like the founders of PayPal or Tim Ferriss or Warren Buffett's former pilot, pro soccer players. You know, all these people were in his circle. They knew of him. They respected him, but he wasn't a household name. And when I was just reading about him, a much more positive mentor. And so my career really began when I started working with David. My network blossomed when at 17, I got in touch with a group called the Thiel Foundation, which was started by Peter Thiel, who was one of the co-founders of PayPal and is a big investor in the Bay Area. And he had a conference that his foundation ran where I met other young entrepreneurs. And from there, the rest of my network took off with a lot of the knowledge that I learned from David. Yeah, that's sort of my origin stories. And you know, working with David was where I started picking up steam in terms of my expertise and how to actually be a successful entrepreneur. My network starts growing when I go to this event and meet all these other fellow young entrepreneurs, teenagers who are really taking over the world, who are probably 10 or 20 years out from being the next Elon Musks and Richard Bransons. And you know, we can probably go in many different directions from there, but it was one event and one person that changed my life.
How did you sort of filter? Because you said you made a bad decision by choosing mentor before, and then you said David, he's well regarded in Silicon Valley. How do you nowadays? How do you sort of vet who becomes a mentor for you, or who is included in your support network?
And so another thing I look for is if individuals have a certain level of social proof. And to me, that's things like being a TEDx or TED speaker. If they've won any awards in their industry, if they've been featured in press outlets, whatever sort of dictates if they're a trustworthy person in their industry, that is something I do look for. And it's an easy way to see if someone has been vetted somewhat by another association or media outlet or group of people that makes my life easier in terms of assessing if they have a lot of integrity or not. And so it's not always it's not always a full-fledged way of doing it, but if someone reads like my LinkedIn profile, for example, I've put as much social proof as possible so that if someone trusts the TED organization, for example, then they know that the TED organization has trusted me to be a TED speaker, and therefore there's some transference of trust. Or I say, I'm an award-winning author as opposed to a best-selling author, because a lot of people can easily become a best-selling author on Amazon these days, but it's a lot harder to win an award for your writing. And so I say I'm an award-winning author. I say, I've been named a champion for humanity by the United Nations, another organization that most people respect and trust and know. And so there's all these indicators of social proof that I look for if I'm meeting someone for the first time. And so those are two big things. I would say another is just seeing how those first few interactions go when you're meeting someone for the first time. Are they actually, listening to you if you're talking to them over the phone or in person? Are they paying attention to you? If they are going to be late for a meeting or for a call, do they message you in advance of that meeting? Do they try and reschedule, or do they just, ghost on you and not show up? I mean, there's a lot of like old school ways that you can see if someone is going to have integrity or not. That it's pretty easy to tell when someone doesn't act with integrity. And a lot of people don't hold themselves to high standards these days. But, for the people in my network that I really want to spend time with and want to do business with in the future, I do expect a lot of them. And so those are some of the things I look for. If they're going to, show up on time, if they're not going to show up on time, are they going to let me know, ahead of time? Are they going to communicate in an effective manner? It's basics, but outside of relying on social proof and introductions, that's something that I use is just common sense.
Yes, I think that's a very valuable advice that you're giving. Half of this is having the leverage of getting the social proof and introductions by your current network. And I believe perhaps this is why you started the what you call the Meeting of the Minds mastermind, where you have people that are high caliber people that share similar values and also sort of play this role as the connectors as they're in their own industries. Why don't we talk a little bit about the mastermind that you're working on right now?
As an owner of a business, as a community leader, you lead an association. Most people listening to this lead some sort of community or company or group of people. And so it's your job to actually lay the groundwork and the value system and the foundation for how that group of people should operate, even if it's your own family. You're the one that instills the value system. You instill the what social proof matters and what doesn't matter. You're the one in charge of facilitating those introductions among people. So even if a mastermind group, as Gilbert is going to sort of describe and we're going to start talking about, doesn't resonate with you, you know, most of people listening to this lead some sort of community or grouping of people. And so I think it's very important to understand how you're actually curating that group of people and leading that group of people, because that allows for the connections to happen in that community much better than if you don't pay attention or if you don't care about how those communities form and how they operate successfully.
How has your journey been with running and operating this mastermind? Like, what was your biggest learnings through just doing it and growing the group organically?
Yeah, so I would first define what a mastermind group is. And so we run a company called Meeting of the Minds, where we operate an invite-only community and network for successful business owners, entrepreneurs, and CEOs. And so most of our members are either running low seven-figure businesses in US dollars, or they are solopreneurs, either consultants or speakers or authors doing a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in revenue. So these people are knowledgeable at their craft. You know, they've had some sort of track record. And with a mastermind group like Meeting in the Minds, they can actually engage with other successful and like-minded entrepreneurs from all different industries. And so we've attracted CEOs of 7, 8, and 9-figure companies, creators of globally recognized brands and social movements, New York Times bestselling authors, founders of massive tech companies, pioneers in fields as diverse as direct response marketing and Comic-Con, and you know, all these different individuals. They have a community to actually improve and get better and share problems that they're faced with. I've learned a lot in operating Meeting in the Minds and in growing this community, you know, and I'm happy to answer a lot of questions you have about it. You know, but I would say as far as leading a community like this, the most important thing is to actually curate the community in a proper way. So we value diversity of thought and diversity of expertise in our community, but there's other communities that are defined as mastermind groups that value having all their members, you know, meet a certain criteria in terms of like the community or the industry that they operate in, and in terms of the company size that they have. There's men's groups, there's women's groups. So they, you know, there's groups that only want to work with a certain gender of people. You know, so we value diversity, and we value having like three different generations worth of members and having 50-50 men and women. But as the community leader, you know, we need to define what exactly we want and why we want that. And so even if you're leading a company, you have to define the type of employees that you want and the type of clients that you want and why you want those clients, you know, why that matters to you and what you're going to stand for and how your employees should engage with one another and how your customers should engage with one another. So that's sort of some of the high level thinking I have to do as the founder of Meeting of the Minds, but that in turn attracts a certain type of clientele and helps us grow the community.
Wow, that's awesome. I mean, how long have you been operating the mastermind? You already had a lot of insight on this.
Yeah, so Meeting in the Minds has only been around for a little over a year, but I've been speaking to Fortune 1000 companies and to various, you know, groups like Entrepreneurs Organization or TED or the United Nations for a few years now, you know, through my books and through the work that I did with David. And I had a marketing consulting company for 5 or 6 years where I was working with top thought leaders and small businesses. I've been actually sort of filtering top talent out for years, but only in the last year or, you know, a little over a year have we actually brought those people together so that they can grow businesses exponentially and help each other develop as leaders in the way that Meeting in the Minds helps them do that. So, you know, it's only done it for a little over a year with Meeting in the Minds, but it's growing pretty quickly. We're following other mastermind groups that exist that do this pretty well in their own industries or in their own unique way. And I think we've found a way to attract high integrity and high subject matter individuals who value that diversity that we offer, you know, at the end of the day, want to grow much faster than their competition can.
So what are the core benefits of being in a group? I know we mentioned the support network. Is there any benefits that are, I mean, could be seen as perks, just being in the group, not social related perks, if you get my drift?
Yeah, I mean, when you're with a community, yeah, when you're in a community of top performers like Meeting of the Minds and people that are very diverse in how they operate, you know, there's one idea or one connection from any of our quarterly meetings could result in hundreds of thousands of dollars of value, if not millions of dollars worth of value. You think about the type of business partnerships that can come from our events, or if you have someone who's a world-renowned architect or someone who is an amazing individual in the finance industry, and they suddenly learn about the marketing tactics that professional speakers or startup founders use to grow their companies, that could be a game changer for, you know, in industries that aren't normally thinking about marketing in terms of how other industries would do it. And so there's a lot of business breakthroughs that happen within Meeting of the Minds simply because innovation happens on the edge of multiple industries coming together, and that really diverse way of thinking actually occurring and being available to our members. So we've had individuals join our community and walk away completely revitalizing or redoing their marketing teams and their marketing systems or their sales teams and systems. We've had people walk away with strategies for fundraising. We've had people who are about to IPO a company think through how they're going to grow their user bases. You know, whatever problem these business owners have, they can turn to a community like Meeting of the Minds, where, you know, they know they have to check their ego at the door, be very open and honest about their challenges, but then they're going to get a lot of accountability and support from everyone else in the room to help them think about how they can ultimately solve that problem and be successful. Not only be successful, but do it as quickly as possible. And so, yeah, I would say business breakthroughs are a big benefit of Meeting in the Minds, just because of the innovative possibilities of a group as diverse as what we offer. There's accountability. You know, if you say to the entire group that you're going to do something, it's much more likely that you're actually going to follow through than if you know, are just taking down notes and think you're going to actually execute on something, but then never look at your notebook. Yeah, you know, you get the collective intelligence of the group as well, which is amazing leverage in terms of, you know, understanding what your clients are going to want or understanding how to solve problems. You know, we have my network's pretty vast, but then if you think of all the network of everyone in the room who's successful, there's almost endless possibilities for accessing the opportunities or resources or connections that one would need in order to grow their business. And so, you know, that's part of why we curate the room with, you know, so much effort, is because we want people to check their ego at the door. We want them to sort of be in awe of the talent in the room and the level of intelligence that they have access to. You know, once everyone's there, then it's really about getting down to business and solving problems so we can all grow our businesses.
Mm. So how does the format of that usually work? How does it play out? Like, you have, I know that you have like summits, but you have it like once a year, twice a year, or?
So Meeting of the Minds takes place quarterly, and we meet in places. Yeah. So we meet once every 3 or 4 months. We meet in really cool places like Bermuda or Napa Valley. And that provides a really cool environment where everyone can step away from their day-to-day work and sort of enter into this more collaborative mindset. It also allows us to build the connections within our community much more effectively, because people, you know, you build relationships with people by sharing unique experiences. And so if people are traveling to go to places like Bermuda, or they're going wine tasting in, you know, Napa Valley, or they're rappelling off the side of a mountain, which we've done in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, there's that sort of builds the bonds in our network very quickly. And it's just a lot of fun. So we meet quarterly. We allow new entrepreneurs and business owners and CEOs within our network to experience trial memberships, which allow them to access any 3-day experience that we host. And then we have an annual membership option where after someone gets a trial membership, if they've gotten a lot of value out of the experience, they can join us as an annual member, which gets them access to all of our quarterly summits, as well as a private online community and a mentor network, really just a whole, dedicated program around accelerating their business growth.
Yeah, because the cost of the annual membership can be quite expensive compared to any other like membership that someone might have in the
Yeah, it definitely requires some investment. The trial memberships are $3,000 currently, and so that is a lot different than other events that people may go to for networking, some of which may even be free. But if you think about it, if you're investing $3,000 and you're traveling to an event, you're taking 3 days off of your calendar in order to go to an event, everyone else in the room has been invited in that same fashion and has been vetted and has also made that investment of time and money and energy. So they're really there to help you, and they're wanting to get a return on their investment. So it's a much different ball game when you're talking about a mastermind community like ours than a free networking event, run by your local chamber of commerce or something like that. And, when you look at other mastermind groups and even our own, where a lot of the most successful entrepreneurs and business owners spend their weekends. And I have mentors of my own that invest hundreds of thousands of dollars every single year in attending mastermind events like ours and being a part of these mastermind networks because of the level of curation behind them, because of the other people in the room that are making that sort of investment. And so it's not for everyone, but if you understand sort of all the hoops and obstacles that we place in front of people to join us at these different events, then you'll sort of realize how high caliber everyone else in the room is. And then when you are calculating if it's worth your time or if it's worth your money, we actually protect our trial memberships with a more than money guarantee, where we state if someone invests $3,000 to attend an event and they feel like they don't get their value from the event, we actually give them all their money back and then write an additional check to their favorite charity. We've not once had to do that. And so we stand behind our work, and everyone who has attended a Meeting of the Minds event has gotten a ton of value out of it. We got introduced because one of our mutual friends had attended a Meeting of the Minds and found it valuable and wanted to invite you to one of our reunion gatherings. So it's really a really interesting and enriching environment once you get everyone in the room.
Yes, I agree with that because people are really paying for the environment that you are creating and, like you said, cultivating even the events themselves. So someone that pays for the entire years of membership, they have access to the summits or do they have to pay for those separately as well?
No, they get access to everything that we offer just for the annual membership price.
Okay, so they have to. Okay, so either it's a trial for one of the summits or it's annual for it.
Yeah, and we curate our community, very closely. So we actually don't allow any annual members until people have a trial membership. And that's partly so we can show that we're worth someone's time and money and energy, not only with a trial membership, but with an annual membership. And we want to prove our value first. But we also like to see how incoming individuals thrive or don't thrive in a community like Meeting in the Minds. So we really monitor that closely.
So what are your plans for the group in the next year, 3 years, and 5 years?
Yeah, so we're only going to have 100 memberships available for Meeting in the Minds, and so hopefully by the end of 2019 we'll fill out the membership, and if it takes until early 2020 to fill that out, then that'll be what we do. And that way we have 100 people that are world class at what they do, that are meeting once a quarter all around the world in cool places like Napa or Bermuda or New York will eventually launch MOTM-X, or Meeting in the Minds X, and that'll be an even higher level of membership and have a two-year commitment behind it. But there will be a profit sharing component to that. And so that'll be really cool. We'll get about 25 businesses that all want to contractually commit themselves to growing together through, you know, profit sharing. So that'll be really exciting. And, you know, long-term, I'm just looking for the world's top talent, especially top millennial talent, because I want to start new businesses and partner with those individuals. You know, if I'm, you know, through my books and through Meeting of the Minds, you know, I'm building a network of people that are world-class in the legal space, in the technology space, in healthcare, in sports, in entertainment, you know, any industry imaginable. And eventually I'm going to have the opportunity to work with some of these individuals. And so right now I'm just sort of figuring out who I'm going to have those relationships with, where we could launch new companies together, or that I'm going to want to invest time and money behind in the future. And so Meeting of the Minds is an exciting accelerator, and it's an exciting network for me to start testing some of those ideas and some of those theories while giving our members a ton of value, you know, today.
Sounds like a lot of exciting times ahead.
Yeah, I can't complain.
So if people would like to learn more about you and Meeting of the Minds, where can they find out more about you?
Yeah, so they can feel free to email me if you're listening to this. It's just Jared, J-A-R-E-D, Kleinert, K-L-E-I-N-E-R-T, @gmail.com. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. I have a cool new website called dinnerwithjared.com. Where I allow people to apply to join various dinner parties that I host whenever I travel. And so I do a lot of those dinner parties in New York and LA and San Francisco and Atlanta and major cities all around the United States. But I'm open to traveling and co-hosting dinners and cocktail parties and all that. So that's a little fun project I just spun up. And then Meeting the Minds is currently MOTM.co. But then you can also contact me directly to find out about our most up-to-date events or, you know, news and things like that. So it's very much a curated thing. So I do market Meeting the Minds and promote it, but most people attending our events are coming directly from my personal network, or they're people that I've known for months or years because of that. It's just a really cool, like, family environment. Once we're there, people are able to get a lot of value from it.
Nice. One final question.
Sure.
And I got this sort of from Lewis House. I believe it was Lewis House. I know it was John Lee Dumas. And it pretty much was, when was the last time you changed your mind about something that was important to you? But I want to apply this question to networking and connecting in general. So what is something that belief that you previously had about networking, connecting, building relationships, creating communities, that you've now changed your mind about, and why?
That's a good question. I guess I would say I'm more patient than I have been in the past, and yet at the same time, I'm very impatient. So it's, I balance, you know, if I see that someone has promise, you know, it has integrity, but maybe isn't quite there, you know, I do spend as much time as possible investing in those relationships, or supporting someone, or not, you know, not pressuring them to join Meeting of the Minds or anything like that. I just really want to be supportive and be there 5 or 10 years from now, as opposed to worrying about the next 5 or 10 months of a relationship, or the next 5 or 10 days of a relationship, which is sort of, that's very important from a marketing and sales perspective, to think about your audience and think about your network in a long-term capacity, rather than getting upset at someone if they say something to you that's not so nice in the short term, or if they do miss a phone call or something. You know, I try and give people the benefit of the doubt. And yet at the same time, you know, if someone has low integrity, no matter how promising a relationship is from a skill standpoint or from a financial standpoint, I just cut those people out of my life. And so, yeah, I'm very impatient with people that don't have a lot of integrity. For people that are high integrity and are just good people, you know, even if they're, you know, premature in terms of their skill set, or, you know, if they're a few years out from actually achieving their full potential, you know, I want to support them in any way I can and spend a lot of time doing so.
Thanks. That's awesome advice, Jared.
Thanks.
I appreciate you coming on to the show.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how this, how your podcast builds over time and happy to support it. Glad we met. And I hope I hear from some of your listeners. Definitely email me if you're hearing this and resonated, and check out Meeting of the Minds. And yeah, I'm always happy to hear from people who listen to some of the podcasts that I'm on.
Great stuff, Jared. This concludes our podcast episode. Come and check out our episodes every Tuesday and for more content and value from our guests. Thank you for coming on the show, Jared.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.